It is Tuesday, July 14th. The news cycle is moving faster than the institutions meant to manage it, so here is your midday update. The recent ceasefire agreement between Washington and Tehran has collapsed. Following this, the United States has declared a naval blockade of Iranian ports and announced a 20% transit toll on all cargo moving through the Strait of Hormuz. The administration claims the revenue will fund protection efforts in the waterway. The move effectively ends the previous diplomatic framework. It replaces a negotiated pause with a policy of indefinite, militarized containment. The Strait of Hormuz is now effectively a toll road patrolled by the U.S. Navy. Here's the thing about this 20% toll. It is almost certainly unenforceable under international law, and the International Maritime Organization is already pushing back. But the legal reality doesn't seem to be the point. The administration is trying to monetize the protection of shipping lanes that it previously defended for free. It is a fundamental shift in how the U.S. projects power. You don't just secure the sea anymore. You charge a protection fee to keep the tankers moving. The second-order consequences are already showing up in the shipping industry. To avoid the toll and the oversight, carriers are turning to what the industry calls dark crossings. Vessels are disabling their tracking transponders to move goods through the region undetected. This is a massive problem for global trade transparency. Once you normalize these clandestine routes, you lose the ability to actually monitor supply chains. You are creating a shadow economy that is impossible to regulate or protect if things go sideways. It's a classic case of a policy meant to control a situation, actually making it more chaotic. The diplomatic failure here is staggering. The original memorandum of understanding was left intentionally vague to make the optics of a ceasefire look better. It lacked technical parameters or enforcement mechanisms. It was, essentially, a document designed to look like a win on paper while leaving the actual work of keeping the peace to kinetic force. When you treat a state-level conflict like a transactional real estate negotiation, you get exactly this result. The administration thought they were cutting a deal. Iran treated it as a tactical pause to reset its position. Now, the U.S. is locked into a permanent, expensive role as the region's security guarantor. We are not just patrolling the strait anymore. We are tethered to it. Meanwhile, there have been two reported fatal shootings of undocumented immigrants by ICE agents in less than a week, one in Houston and another in Maine. These incidents are fueling a climate of fear that is causing local officials to openly contest federal authority. It is a feedback loop. As the federal government pushes for harder enforcement, targeting 2,000 arrests per day, the margin for error in the field shrinks. When that happens, you get these fatal incidents that force local police and prosecutors into an adversarial stance against their own federal counterparts. You end up with a breakdown in basic law enforcement cooperation. It feels like the institutional guardrails are coming off all at once. You have a zombie Congress, paralyzed by the absences of key figures. You have a public health crisis involving a reported cyclospora outbreak that the weakened CDC is struggling to track. You have subpoenas targeting journalists at the New York Times. The administration is moving to consolidate power while the actual capacity of the state to manage basic health and infrastructure is hollowing out. It's not just the Strait of Hormuz. It's a systemic drift toward performative governance where the goal is to project strength while the underlying reality becomes increasingly brittle. We are watching a series of short-term reactive postures turn into long-term systemic debt. Whether it's the legal fight over the Paramount and Warner Brothers merger or the blockade in the Gulf, the common thread is a total collapse of consensus. Nobody knows what the rules are anymore, so everyone is playing for leverage, hoping the other side blinks first. That is a hell of a way to run a global superpower. As these public structures falter, the private sector is attempting to automate its way out of the resulting volatility. Businesses are moving from testing AI chatbots to embedding agents into their core infrastructure. This isn't just about efficiency. It is a fundamental shift in how organizations operate, bill for services, and secure their systems. The move toward autonomous agents is real. According to recent industry analysis, 89% of engineering teams now grant AI agents right access to their systems, up from 52% last year. This creates a massive new attack surface. Companies like CrowdStrike, pronounced CrowdStrike, are seeing valuation premiums because they provide the security guardrails for this agent-based world. If you treat AI as an add-on, you are likely failing. 95% of corporate AI projects fall apart because they lack this structural core. The legal industry is feeling this pressure in its bones. Big law firms rely on a pyramid model where junior associates bill for repetitive document work. Generative AI can now do that work at scale. This forces a transition from the billable hour to value-based pricing. It is an existential threat to the traditional partnership structure. Firms that cannot pivot will likely hollow out as lean, AI-native competitors replace their reliance on human-intensive execution. Then there is the data problem. Organizations are trying to capture what experts call a cognitive fingerprint. This involves pulling raw data from meeting transcripts and voice notes to map how leadership actually makes decisions. It is moving from self-reported data to observational analysis. By capturing the why behind a decision, companies can build a portable, context-rich model that replicates specific reasoning instead of generic, commoditized output. This shift is changing software operations, too. Frameworks like Aura, pronounced Aura, are moving site reliability engineering from manual, imperative scripting to declarative models. You define the outcome, and the agents handle the execution. It is a dark factory approach where agents manage system health autonomously. This allows SREs to move from firefighters to reliability architects. It is a necessary evolution. As system complexity grows, human-only management becomes an expensive, slow bottleneck. The tension here is between legacy management and the reality of AI integration. We are seeing a two-culture phenomenon. One part of the workforce is embracing these tools, while the other remains fearful. This friction slows down adoption. It is why Canva is shifting to a decentralized speedboat model. Instead of one giant, slow-moving ship, they let teams experiment with AI to solve their own specific friction points. They are betting that the company that learns the fastest wins. Look, there is a lot of noise about whether this is a bubble. It is not. The capital expenditure we are seeing is fully utilized. It is an infrastructure-driven expansion. The largest spenders have seen a 10-point increase in return on invested capital since they started this build-out. They are not buying dark fiber that sits idle. They are buying compute that runs agents. The takeaway is simple. The era of the individual siloed chatbot is dead. We are entering a multiplayer paradigm where AI interacts directly with enterprise systems to complete complex objectives. If your organization is still tethered to email as its primary work tool, you are already behind. Those systems silo knowledge and prevent the kind of open, channel-based collaboration where AI can actually learn from past decisions. You have to stop measuring AI success by simple task completion. You need to look at organizational resilience and how well you are hardening your systems against these new agent-driven risks. It is a shitty situation for companies that want to keep things the way they were, but the market is clearly moving toward outcome-based economics. The companies that win will be the ones that stop treating AI as a luxury and start treating it as the operating system for how work actually gets done. That shift toward automation might be efficient, but it is missing the mark when it comes to basic human health. Medical diagnostic systems are currently failing to catch common parasitic infections like toxocariasis. These helminths, which are often spread by household pets, migrate through the human brain and lungs. Doctors frequently miss these infections because they rely on routine screenings rather than specific antibody testing. This diagnostic gap leads to chronic inflammation that is often misdiagnosed as autoimmune disease, leaving patients trapped in cycles of treating symptoms while the parasite remains active. It is a hell of a thing to realize that our medical training is so specialized that the obvious is being overlooked. We have a massive blind spot here. We are losing the physician-scientist model, which means there are fewer experts left to connect academic research with clinical practice. When preventative measures like low-cost hookworm vaccines fail to find commercial partners, we end up paying for expensive, reactive care instead. We are essentially choosing to be sick because it is more profitable than being healthy. This same pattern of systemic failure shows up in our leadership models. Organizations are moving away from traditional succession planning in favor of what they call ready enough talent development. With artificial intelligence generating analysis faster than humans, the role of a leader has shifted from an analyst to an architect of sensory systems. They are no longer making specific decisions. They are building the governance structures that allow an organization to learn and adapt. The problem is that this new model is destroying the apprenticeship pipeline. As entry-level roles get automated, there are fewer ways for future leaders to gain experience before taking on high-stakes responsibilities. We are replacing deep functional expertise with a requirement for corporate diplomacy and adaptive agility. It sounds great in a boardroom presentation, but it is effectively hollowing out the next generation of management. We are seeing this reliance on machines play out in the stock market as well. According to a recent test by Brandon Doyle, 5 artificial intelligence models were used as stock market advisors with $1,000 of real capital each. The models outperformed the S&P 500 by a significant margin, with the top performer, Claude, doubling its capital. The catch is that these models achieved their results by ignoring standard risk aversion and moving heavily into leveraged exchange-traded funds. They also showed a dangerous tendency toward herd behavior. Once one model found a winning strategy in semiconductors, the others simply copied it. If retail investors start relying on these same tools, we are looking at a massive increase in market volatility. The models proved they can trade momentum better than humans, but they also proved that they are prone to collective failure. This brings us to an uncomfortable truth about trying to force simplicity on complex systems. Some researchers argue that our attempts to eradicate parasites are a category error. Parasites are not just irritants, they are highly adaptive organisms that play a role in shaping our immune development. By trying to sanitize everything, we are actually creating new vulnerabilities. We are living in a world where we think we can control nature with a few tweaks. But nature is usually 3 steps ahead of our latest plan. We see this same failure to account for complexity in the mathematical models of card shuffling. While the classic Diaconis result cites 7 riffle shuffles to randomize a deck, some newer, non-traditional research suggests that if you account for the messy reality of human error, you actually need 14 shuffles to hit the cutoff point where chaos takes over. We keep building systems based on the assumption that we are working with clean, predictable inputs. The reality is that human clumsiness and systemic friction always require more work than the math suggests. Our institutions are struggling because they refuse to acknowledge these realities. Whether it is the political class clinging to power well past their prime or corporations like OpenAI facing legal chaos after a period of unbridled growth, the theme is the same. We are prioritizing short-term leverage over long-term stability. Maternal mental health is treated as an individual failure rather than the systemic crisis it is. We are failing to build the support structures that actually keep people and systems alive. We are obsessed with the illusion of control, and it is making us remarkably fragile. It turns out we are failing our bodies just as badly as we are failing our businesses. Here is how some are finally trying to fix the underlying infrastructure. Growth is a math problem that most companies try to solve by working harder, which is usually the wrong move. we have a cluster of recent briefings from industry operators on how to stop the cycle of selling hours and chasing low-quality leads. The consensus is consistent. Stop trying to optimize the commodity trap and start building infrastructure that actually scales. Sam Blond, an investor with a background in go-to-market strategy, argues that most revenue shortfalls aren't about closing percentages. They are about pipeline volume. When a company has a surplus of potential customers, the power dynamic shifts. You stop begging for deals and start curating partnerships. This allows for prescriptive sales, where you define exactly how a customer should buy, and strategic disqualification, where you walk away from bad fit clients who will just cause churn later. It is a simple shift, but it is brutal to execute. You have to move away from low-impact paid ads and toward high-effort brand building. The home building sector is currently hitting this wall. One major builder is trying to scale from 6,500 to 10,000 homes a year, but they are stuck. They are dumping money into bottom-of-funnel search terms like new homes near me, where costs per lead have topped $200. They are fighting over the same small group of active buyers while ignoring the much larger segment that is not yet searching. The fix is moving to a full-funnel strategy. They need to use video assets, founder stories, drone footage, customer testimonials, to build trust before the buyer even starts their search. It turns out that when you build your own audience, you don't have to pay a premium to outbid your competitors. This professionalization isn't limited to traditional companies. Creators like Jen Luke are showing that seven-figure businesses aren't built on viral moments. They are built on systematic planning. Luke moved her operation from reactive content posting to long lead editorial calendars managed in Notion. She shifted from renting an audience on TikTok to owning it through a paid newsletter. She stopped being a laborer who edits footage and became a media startup CEO. The common thread here is the move away from the founder as the primary bottleneck. Whether you are a creator or a home builder, you reach a point where you have to give up your Legos. You have to outsource the admin work, build the system of record, and stop doing the things that don't scale. This extends to how you build your team. Paul Alex, who focuses on scaling operations, suggests that standard hiring filters, like degrees and resumes, are largely useless. They measure how well someone navigates a bureaucracy, not how well they solve a new problem. He advocates for chaos testing. Give candidates actual, unresolved business problems during the interview. If they can't handle the pressure, they aren't going to help you scale. Once you have that elite talent, you have to get out of their way. Micromanagement is the fastest way to kill a high-growth environment. The final piece of this puzzle is the energy cost of growth. There is a persistent badge of honor culture around overwork that is mathematically stupid. Cognitive impairment from sleep deprivation is comparable to working while intoxicated. Sedentary behavior for 8 to 10 hours a day kills creativity and retention. Leaders who prioritize sleep and movement aren't being soft. They are optimizing for long-term cognitive output. The commodity trap is seductive because it feels like you're doing something. You're bidding on keywords, you're hiring for resumes, you're sending emails at 2 in the morning. But none of that is building a moat. If you want to escape that trap, look at the service sector. Alex Hormozi has been pushing moving companies to stop selling by the hour. Instead, they should offer tiered service architectures, VIP packages that include master-level labor and insurance. It forces the customer to choose between a commodity price and a value-based partnership. It turns the sales process into an education. The shift is clear. Stop optimizing the mess you already have. Build the infrastructure that makes the mess unnecessary in the first place. It is a hell of a lot more work on the front end, but it is the only way to get out of the churn. Fixing that infrastructure is a long game, but the world keeps spinning regardless. Here are a few other things you should know today. Scouts are using smartphone computer vision to find athletes. They are scanning millions of people instead of thousands, which, honestly, is a hell of a way to blow up old socioeconomic barriers. Manchester City is reportedly chasing Ayew Boaty, pronounced Ioboabuahd, with a €100 million price tag. They are betting on integrating youth immediately instead of the old-school loan-to-develop model. Fantasy football players are finding that picking guys owned by fewer than 5% of managers is the only way to climb the rankings. It turns out that when everyone picks the same team, you have to get weird to win. Major League Baseball's robot umps are overturning 53% of challenged calls. It is a nice reminder that while humans are mostly accurate, they are also consistently wrong enough to justify the tech. Wealthy retirees are hitting a tax wall with mandatory distributions. These required withdrawals can trigger surprise surcharges and push you into a higher tax bracket than you planned for. Some people are trying to reframe discipline as a system of enjoyment rather than just white-knuckling through life. It sounds like a marketing pitch, but it is actually just a way to avoid burning out before you hit your goals. The military is now using autonomous surface drones in combat. It keeps personnel away from the front lines, which sounds great until you realize it just makes it easier to keep the fighting going forever. People are talking about the unicorn text, which is just a fancy way of saying we are all acting like we are in every room at once. It is exhausting, and it is killing off the specific local norms that used to keep us sane. The NBA is stalling on a Clippers-Raptors trade due to a league investigation. The teams are terrified of contract voids, so they are sitting on their hands while the lawyers figure it out. Even rich couples act like they are broke because of old financial trauma. It turns out that living through the 2008 crash does more to your brain than a spreadsheet can fix. YouTube is still the ultimate end run around traditional media gatekeepers. It lets creators reach massive audiences without needing a suit in a boardroom to sign off on their existence. Comedy is at its best when a character thinks they are the smartest person in the room while being the biggest idiot. It is a reliable formula because, look, we all know someone exactly like that. Architects usually hit their stride after age 60. It is one of the few fields that actually rewards you for getting older, unlike sports, where you are basically a senior citizen by 30. A single word of validation from a teacher can dismantle a lifetime of fear. It is a reminder that we are all just one conversation away from being slightly less terrified of our own potential. Xi Jinping is using old-school Leninist discipline to drag China toward being the world's primary economic rival, regardless of the domestic cost. That is the midday update. We will be back tomorrow with more.